Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
All right, now we're joined once again for today by Pastor Andrew Peary, who's going to be helping us understand what's happening in chapter 49. These are the last kicks of this dying book. This is the second last chapter of the book. That's chapter 49. Pastor Peary, good afternoon to you. Welcome, and thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us.
Good afternoon, Naye. It's good to be here. And good afternoon to the listeners as well.
Thank you very much. We're going to read 33 verses of chapter 49, and then we get into it. Is that okay, Mfunis?
Yes.
Right, I'm reading it from the NIV. It reads as follows: Then Jacob called for his sons and said, "Gather around so that I can tell you what will happen to you in days to come." Right there, Mfunis. Right there. What will? Okay. It continues, "Assemble and listen, sons of Jacob. Listen to your father, Israel. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, the first sign of my strength, excelling in honor, excelling in power. Turbulent as the waters, you will no longer excel. For you went up unto your father's bed, onto my couch, and defiled it. Simeon and Levi are brothers, aren't they all? Their words are weapons of violence. Let me not enter their council. Let me not join their assembly, for they have killed men in their anger and hamstrung oxen as they pleased. Cursed be their anger, so fierce, and their fury so cruel. I will scatter them in Jacob and disperse them in Israel. Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You are a lion's cub, O Judah. You return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches and lies down. Like a lioness, who dares to rouse him? The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he comes to whom it belongs, and the obedience of the nations is his. He will tether his donkey to a vine, his colt to the choicest branch. He will wash his garments in wine, his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes will be darker than wine, his teeth whiter than milk. Zebulun will live by the seashore and become a haven for ships. His border will extend towards Sidon. Issachar is a scrawny donkey, lying down between two saddlebags. When he sees how good is his resting place and how pleasant is his land, he will bend his shoulder to the burden and submit to forced labor. Dan will provide justice for his people. As one of the tribes of Israel, Dan will be a serpent by the roadside, a viper along the path, that bites the horse's heels so that its rider tumbles backwards. I look for your deliverance, O Lord. Gad will be attacked by a band of raiders. But he will attack them at their heels. Asher's food will be rich. He will provide delicacies fit for a king. Naphtali is a doe set free that bears beautiful fawns. Joseph is a fruitful vine, near a spring, whose branches climb over a wall. With bitterness, archers attacked him. They shot at him with hostility, but his bow remained steady. His strong arms stayed supple. because of the hand of the mighty one of Jacob, because of the shepherd, the rock of Israel, because of your father's God who helps you, because of the Almighty who blesses you with blessings of the heavens above, blessings of the deep that lies below, blessings of the breast and womb. Yeah, yeah. Your father's blessings are greater than the blessings of the ancient mountains, than the bounty of the age-old hills. Yeah. Let all these rest on the head of Joseph, on the brow of the prince among his brothers. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he devours the prey. In the evening he divides the plunder. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father said to them when he blessed them, giving each the blessing appropriate to him. Then he gave them these instructions: I am about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave in the field of Ephron the Hittite, the cave in the field of Machpelah, near Mamre in Canaan, which Abraham bought as a burial place from the Ephron and the Hittite, along the field. There Abraham and his wife Sarah were buried. There Isaac and his wife Rebekah were buried. And there I buried Leah. The field and the cave in it were bought from the Hittites. When Jacob had finished giving instructions to his sons, he drew his feet up into the bed, breathed his last, and was gathered to his people. May the Lord bless the reading of his word now and forever. Amen. Pastor, your comments.
First of all, amen. Amen. Beautiful, beautiful chapter with two sets of characters. There's Jacob and his 12 sons. What I find interesting is the prophecies he pronounces. And I must also note how accurate they were, at least how far I've read. I think that's what stands out to me. And also that he prophesies for Judah that the scepter will not depart from Judah. And that's right. Exactly why Jesus coming.
Okay. Let's just begin there. Then Jacob called for his sons and said, "Gather around so that I can tell you what will happen to you in days to come." Remember, he had already adopted Manasseh and Ephraim. Why did they not gather around as well? Pastor, I cannot hear. There you go. I can hear you now. So did you hear my question?
No, I did not.
The question was, verse 1 says, Jacob called for his sons and said, "Gather around so that I can tell you what will happen to you in days to come." This happens in 49, and yet in 48, he had the two sons of Jacob, of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. Why did they not gather around here? Because they were already sons at this stage.
Yeah. So, first thing is because he's already blessed them.
Okay.
Secondly, I imagine he did not want their presence to complicate anything. It was a very quick assignment. I need to pass my blessings down to these 12 as well, or these 11 at this point.
Joseph is also blessed there. The 12th one is also blessed. He's mentioned and is blessed as well.
Yeah, but he had already received sort of a blessing in the previous chapter.
Indeed, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. So, this is my imagination, and I haven't seen it written anywhere else.
Right.
But just that, because he's already blessed those other two, he now calls these 12, because should he start blessing the grandchildren, it becomes a different conversation.
But that's the thing. That's what I'm bringing to your attention, Funis. They are no longer grandchildren. They are part of the tribes of Israel. They are sons to Jacob. That's what he said.
Yeah.
He said, Ephraim and Manasseh are no longer yours. They're mine. The rest will be yours, but they're mine. And they'll be counted amongst your brothers.
But so, can you imagine how that was going to go with these ones who already had an issue with Joseph having dreams?
Well, that they should have thought of that before he adopted them.
Yeah, so my imagination, because I haven't read it anywhere mentioned specifically in that way, but my imagination has taken me to those places where it's because he's already blessed those two. Now let me bless these 12.
So if I'm listening to you well, Mfundisi, he's still continuing along his manipulative, deceptive self. I mean, he's trying to hide what he has done in the previous chapter from the other 12. So this man has not repented, even up until his deathbed. This man is still hiding things. He's manipulating, he's deceiving, he's lying, he's creating an impression that he's blessing all 12. And yes, he's already blessed this one with a Heli pot. I mean, that's what he said to Joseph. I'm going to bless you with the land that I took with sword and a bow. So he's giving a double blessing to Joseph above and beyond the fact that it's already promised that he's going to adopt his children. So this man is still continuing in his lies.
So we can look at it as him managing the situation.
By not being open and honest with his children.
Well, he wasn't lying per se.
Well, when he doesn't divulge to the children that I've already adopted these two, the children of my other son, this one specific son, I've adopted them and I've made the grandchildren equal to you. That's lying. Yeah. When you hide information, it's very crucial information, you're lying.
But let's also consider that this isn't being written by Baruch, who's sitting there and is a scribe writing what's been transpiring, right? And also because these are divided into chapters,
right?
Us who divide it into chapters,
right?
The ones we're reading, it's one flowing story.
Fair enough. But the narrative is one narrative which has its own sequence. By sequence, whether we're removing the punctuation in the chapter divisions, still the narrative still dictates that he did not bring the other ones. When Joseph came with the two sons, he didn't say, hold on, let me bring your brothers along so that they too can observe me blessing your sons and not their sons. Yeah? Let me do exactly what caused you to be sold out to begin with. Let me show favoritism. He hides that. He continues in the favoritism that caused his brother to be in the very same predicament he's in. He hides it, Mfundis. He doesn't. He's not open and honest with the children, even now.
But watch this, yeah.
Right.
Chapter 48, the last verse.
Right.
Over, I have given you one portion above your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and my bow. Now, let's forget that the next number is 49.
Right.
It just says, and Jacob called his sons.
Yes.
So the sons are coming.
They are not there. He calls them after he has already dispensed with his blessings.
Yeah, so he calls them, and now they are coming.
Right.
We're not told that he tells the other two to go away.
Right.
So we can safely imagine that the other two were there.
Still
with
there.
Joseph.
Okay.
When this conversation is happening, we're not told yet if he tells them or if he breaks it to them in this interaction.
Right.
Because the very first thing we're told, he says, gather together.
Right.
That I may tell you what shall befall you, what will happen to you.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So we're not told whether he says, oh, I've blessed these two. And they're part of my family now.
Yes, yes.
That we're not given.
Yes.
What we're given is that he calls them to tell them this.
Yes, yes, yes. Let's talk about that. The issue of him saying, I will tell you what will.
That was
powerful.
I
mean, how did he know? I mean, I know we spoke about this on a different conversation, but now just clarify it again for this conversation. Does God give fathers the right to direct the paths of their children? What will happen to you?
So he trusts patriarchs in this particular context with authority,
right?
To be able to make pronouncements. I'm going to give an example. you are watching your young child playing in an area that's dangerous. Say, for example, there's load shedding, and so there's water on a brazier, and this child just wants to play around where the heat is.
Mm.
You can tell this child what's going to happen to this child if they continue this way,
right?
Just by watching their behavior. Not that you're prophesying, but you know from experience that when you do certain things, you will end up in a certain location. And then when that happens, you are not all of a sudden a prophet, but you can tell from the behavior,
right,
that this is where you end up. And so he could, one thing is that he could see from the behavior.
Okay.
Second thing is, because of his office or his position in the covenant now, he's able to declare, because of how you have been living, this is what it's going to be for you.
Right. Okay.
And
okay,
what's interesting is that, if I can just interest you in something, in Matthew chapter 4.
Right.
Matthew chapter 4, verse 12 to 14 says, "Now when Jesus heard that John had been put in prison, he departed to Galilee, and leaving Nazareth, he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which was by the sea in the regions of Zebulun and Naphtali." But then when you go to the blessings of Naphtali and Zebulun, in verse, where is that? Chapter 49, verse 13. "Zebulun shall dwell by the haven of the sea." See how accurate that was? Because like many years later,
yeah,
Zebulun is by A.
Okay. 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 Let's go with verse 3. Verse 3 talks to us. I'm going to try and, because I think we're 12 minutes now, I'm going to try and go 1 minute each of this.
Okay.
He seems to be angry at Reuben there. And he says, "Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, the first sign of my strength, excelling in honor, excelling in power, turbulent as the waters. You will no longer excel, for you went up to your father's bed." He's angry there. That's not a blessing. That's a curse, actually.
It is. But it also depends on how you look at blessings and curses.
Sure, not a problem there. But then the bottom line there is, he's not telling him what is going to happen according to his current behavior. He's telling him what is going to happen to him because of how he made him feel as Jacob. "You slept with my woman, and therefore this is what should happen to you." So according to that, we are not told that Reuben continued sleeping around with his father's women. So it can't be his continuous behavior. He's simply punishing him for taking what belongs to him.
So there's a Nigerian pastor who was sharing recently how there are not generational curses, but it's patterns that you see from generations before you that you continue, that continue bringing the same harm. So because of Reuben's attitude that led him to do that, to disregard his father that way, that attitude, not being worked on, was going to be passed down to the next generation. And thus, Jacob is well within his authority to declare that.
I'm not disputing his authority to declare it, Mfundisi. What I'm saying is, right now, it's not a father talking to his son. It's a father talking to a man who slept with his wife.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to verse 5. "Simeon and Levi are brothers." Again here, he's talking about what they did when their sister was raped.
Uh-huh.
He's not talking about their future. He's talking about their past. He's angry at what they did. He says, "I'll no longer listen to your counsel." He's dying. He's not looking at me asking their counsel. But still, he's still angry. He's venting in his state of anger for what they did in the past, a long time ago. Long, long, long time ago. But he's still holding on to that anger.
You acknowledge that later on, God says to the third and fourth generation, right?
Right.
Like these sins will follow the family to the third and fourth generation, because if these attitudes are not worked on, they get passed down.
Right.
And they just show up in some of the worst ways. And that's why for Reuben and for Simeon and Levi, he says that because they had an attitude that led them to that activity, to that behavior. And he's basically saying, because you're not, you haven't worked on this, I know it's going to come down in the next generations.
Now,
then he says, this is what's going to happen to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So coming to that issue of the accuracy of his, of what I call his just venting session, because I think he was just wrong. It was just wrong. Levi, he changes his course. Levi ended up being the nation that was the most blessed, in my view. You won't have to work for jack. You'll just be given seven cities. You'll be priests in those cities, for all the nations will come to you if they want any forgiveness. Hey, Levi was the, in my view, he was the most blessed, Mfundisi.
Huh? Yeah.
He doesn't pay tithe whatsoever. He doesn't know what tithe is. Tithes are paid to him. Huh? Priests come from his descendants. Aaron, Moses are descendants of Levi.
Hmm? Yeah.
I don't know. I think he was very wrong as far as Levi is concerned.
No, but you will acknowledge that there was some anger in Moses. The same anger, yes, that made it that he didn't even enter the promised land.
Right, right.
So there was that. And that Levi was scattered, because that was part of what was pronounced, that they would be scattered in Israel. They didn't have their own sort of settlement. They were scattered in all of them.
The seven cities.
See that, yeah, you see that coming up. So there's some level of accuracy. In fact, there is accuracy to what he says.
No,
as much as flawed in his humanity.
It says here, Mfundisi, Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are weapons of violence. We don't see violence in the weapons of Levi. Quite frankly, his sword now becomes the tool for sacrifices.
Yeah,
a holy tool. Yeah. Verse 6, let me not enter their council. And yet all of Israel would seek out the counsel of the Levites. Huh? All of Israel. Huh? And then let me not join their assembly. Everyone who wanted forgiveness had to go to the Levites. Hmm? The priest, like I said, came from Levi, for they have killed men in their anger and hamstrung oxen as they pleased. Cursed be their anger, so fierce, and their fury so cruel. I will scatter them in Jacob and disperse them in Israel. I'm not quite sure how you read that scattering there, Mfundisi, because in my reading, the scattering is what happened to all of Israel when they were scattered first by the Assyrians and later by the Babylonians. And that didn't happen just to Levi. It happened to all of Israel.
But then this particular one says, and I will scatter them in Israel.
Yeah. So how were they scattered in Israel, Mfundisi?
They did not get their own land. They were spread in all of Israel, living in different lands that were assigned to different people.
So
and you remember?
So in that, Mfundisi, they had prime land in that they were allowed to have the best territory to pitch the tent. They were allowed to sit along the borders of the city. They were allowed to have cities that were only going to be run by them. Seven of those cities. So I'm not quite sure if that's a scattering. I think that was they were elevated.
You remember when I said it depends on how you look at blessings and curses?
Okay.
I'll give you an example in Genesis chapter 3 when Adam and Eve are supposedly being cursed. And Adam is being told, out of the sweat of your brow will you eat.
Right.
When we do our agriculture, good things come out of it.
Right.
Even when it looked like it was a curse.
Right.
So it depends on how we are reading these blessings and curses and this pronouncement.
Okay. Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You are a lion's cub, O Judah. There's a lot of blessing there on Judah. I don't know why. What was so special about Judah? Why did he give so much blessing? Because the majority of the verses in chapter 49 are allocated to the blessings to Judah. Why?
remember, it's he's speaking as Israel as part of the covenant. In chapter 48, you remember, the Lord appeared to me at Luz, and this is what he said.
Right.
Where the Lord repeats the covenant.
Okay.
And so this particular one, it's extended because through Judah is this covenant coming to be fulfilled.
Right.
So he's speaking, yes, sounding like Jacob, I mean, coming out of Jacob, but he's repeating and he's functioning this particular instance as part of the covenant.
Right.
That God has made with his people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I really am running out of time because we have another segment happening in 3 minutes. So I want us to just skip over to the very end of his death, Mfundisi, and which was a point for me that was curious. It's common, but this is an opportunity for you to clarify it. It says he was gathered to his people. Kindly explain that, because that has a very uncomfortable taste in a Seventh-day Adventist ear. that has a different, a very clear understanding of the state of the dead and where the dead are. Now, here it says he was gathered to his people. What does that mean?
it's a very interesting one, because, yes, like you said, it's an uncomfortable one for a lot of people. But other parts of Scripture help us to understand that when the dead die, they know nothing. So if I died and I was buried in a plot of land where the rest of my family is buried, I have been gathered to my people, because he had already given a directive.
But there are no people there, Mfundisi.
But that's where, if people were going to think, where was Andrew laid to rest?
To dust he returns. There are no people in the dust. They are just dust. We return to becoming dust. That's what we believe as far as our state of the dead. Now, what people are you gathered to? Because there are no people. You're no longer a person when you die.
That's true. But we must not run away from the fact that these are people experiencing life a certain way. So if one says, I mean, even now, if one says, I'm going to the grave, I'm going to visit mom's grave, truth is, there's no one you're visiting there.
But why would you even go and visit dust? Because, again,
right?
You're that's dust that's there.
It's the place of a memory for you.
It doesn't change the fact that it's dust. The dust I'm in right now is the same dust that you're in there. Why would I have to go to a particular dust?
And that's true. And I mean, that's how come you find that with the children of Israel, they would bury the individuals and continue moving.
And yeah, but this one wanted to be returned to the very same place his father Isaac was buried, and
yeah,
Abraham.
Put me in a location where it would be easy for you to come find me, because when you go to...
Why would you want to go and find? That's exactly what I'm trying to need at here. That's why I'm trying to grind to here. That what was so specific about, what's so special about a grave site? Because it creates an impression that there's truth to what people are saying, that you can go and visit your ancestors there.
Ah, okay. So what's important about that particular thing is that it's a memorial.
Why?
And
why
God
do we
honors
a memorial?
I'll give the example. When they are crossing Jordan with Joshua.
Sorry for just notice now. It's exactly 2:00.
Okay.
Let's leave
we
it.
We can pick it up tomorrow.
Let me invite you. Let's do a Sinai on just that, Mfundisi.
Awesome. No
just
problem.
That. All right. Thank you very much, Mfundisi. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Naye.
All right. Hey, my goodness. Time always leaves us behind.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.